You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Corned beef and cabbage! Yeah. Corned beef and cabbage!
Hot, hot, in the pot. Hot, hot, in the pot. Mustard and rabbit. Don't forget the horseradish now. Corned beef and cabbage, do the corned beef and cabbage.
Hey, how's it going? This is Chris from the comedy band Power Salad, and you are listening to the Flopcast on W... No, wait, this is the internet. Never mind.
Kyle!
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 288.
Oh no, where's Cornflake? Yes, yes. Hello to the mayor of Chickentown.
Hello, Kevin.
No Cornflake this week.
No, nope, I am subbing in for Cornflake again.
We had a scheduling issue at the last minute.
Well, I'm always happy to serve.
Yes, especially during this election season. It's good that you could find the time somehow. You've already bribed all the chickens in town.
Well, this is an off year. We actually had the Chickentown elections last year.
Oh, okay.
I'm free and clear this year.
You're in the middle of your 31-year term or whatever crazy legislation it was you passed last time that allows this crazy dictatorship to continue.
It's pretty easy to get things by the chickens.
They'll vote for anything.
They just don't care too much about politics.
They're very relaxed. Cornflake will be back next week, we assure you. Maybe we'll drop in some weird audio clips of Cornflake as we like to do when she's not here.
That's always fun.
Let's try that.
I happen to know from screaming, though, that you can make yourself pass out doing so.
Meanwhile, we'll get through this together somehow, my friends. This will be a short one, hopefully. See how it goes.
We'll see.
And we got to start out with National Whatever Day. Boy, it's weird doing National Whatever Day without Cornflake.
I know.
This is her segment.
National Whatever Day!
So strange. But we have follow-up from last week's National Whatever Day to address, and that was Cornflake's National Whatever Day for 1987, was that supernova. There's a supernova in 87 that was visible from Earth, and that was very rare. Like, it had been hundreds of years since there was a supernova you could see without a telescope from Earth. And young Cornflake, way back in 1987, she recalls going outside trying to find the supernova, staring up in the sky. And she was looking for something dramatic. You know, she thought it would look like the Death Star. but she said, in reality, it would just look like a very bright star. You know, you wouldn't be able to tell. It wouldn't look super cool or anything. But anyway, we got word from a couple of listeners. We got a message from Lee, and we got a message from Arturo saying, one of the reasons Cornflake could not see the supernova is that Cornflake was in the Northern Hemisphere, we assume. As far as I know, she was up around here.
I think so.
And this supernova was only visible from the Southern Hemisphere.
Well, that makes sense. And, so, and might have been why you and I don't remember hearing about
she
it.
She never really had a chance.
Poor Cornflake.
Chase down your ice cream truck guy. Get yourself an ice cream sandwich.
They've got a whole different sky down there in the Southern Hemisphere. They see different stuff, as it turns out.
Absolutely.
So no supernova for Cornflake in 87, and now we know why. Now we know the truth. So thanks for that. As far as other listener feedback, well, we keep getting weird stuff from Bob. Bob sends weird email every week, strange photos and cartoons and things I don't understand, but we love it. So keep that stuff coming, Bob. And we got a note from Melinda from Retro Blasting, which is a YouTube video series like about pop culture stuff of the past. Melinda mentioned she enjoyed our coverage of the Madonna Make My Video for True Blue contest. That brought back some memories.
All right, so that was something that made an impression on her.
Yeah, Melinda had forgotten all about the bizarre Make My True Blue video contest, and she was a fan of that whole album, she said. That was a monster album. That was like the Papa Don't Preach, Open Your Heart.
Sure.
La Isla Bonita.
Yeah, I like Open Your Heart. I think that's probably my favorite song of that era.
So nice to hear from Melinda. She has a new podcast, too, because Retro Blasting is a video series, but now they have a good old-fashioned audio podcast like we do.
Well, that's cool.
It's called Dreamland.
Oh.
And it's Melinda and some other co-hosts, and they're just kicking around some fun pop culture nostalgia kind of subjects every episode. Meanwhile, this week for National Whatever Day, this is episode 288. We're talking about 1988. We don't have cornflake, no. So you have agreed to step up and bring us something for 1988.
Yeah, last time I participated in this, I chose a TV show, so I thought I would go for movies this time.
Yes.
And I looked at the list of movies that came out in 1988, figuring I'd see a couple that that made an impression on me. There were a ton of good movies that came out in 1988.
Sure.
Such that I couldn't pick just one, so I'm going to list a handful that made an impression on me.
A whole list of movies there.
A whole list of movies.
Okay,
so
let's do this.
The Accidental Tourist.
That's Gina Davis.
And William Hurt.
Yeah, what happened to William Hurt? He disappeared.
No, I've seen him pop up
around
in a few things. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I thought he was in one or more of the Marvel movies as well.
Oh, yeah. My apologies to William Hurt.
Yeah, he's still a hard-working actor.
Yeah, Gina Davis won the Academy Award for that.
She did, for Best Supporting Actress.
I remember that.
I like that movie a lot. It was one of the kind of first kind of indie movies that I saw.
She's a dog trainer,
mm-hmm.
and William Hurt is the grumpy dog owner, and that's literally all I remember about the movie. Thank you. I haven't seen it since 1988.
Yeah.
And Gina kept accidentally taking tours.
okay, we'll say that's what was the case.
Yes.
Adventures of Baron Munchausen was a big one for me. I saw that several times, and that's a Terry Gilliam film.
Yes, I remember that.
Uma Thurman was in that.
Yep.
And
that was one of her very first movies.
Right, because she Dangerous Liaisons, I was going to get to that later, but that came out the same year.
Yeah. I was in school with a kid who knew Uma Thurman from high school.
Oh, my.
Because he was very excited, telling everyone, hey, Uma Thurman. This new girl in the movies. I know her.
Yeah, she made a big impression on me in this year.
Yep.
Big, another great movie.
Yes.
And
part of that run of kids and adults switching roles.
Yes,
there
18
four
again.
Of them, four of them within a year.
I only found three. There was 18 again,
yep.
Big, Vice Versa, and what was the last one?
Like Father, Like Son.
Oh.
Kirk Cameron and Dudley Moore. Come on.
That's amazing. Biloxi Blues with...
yes. Matthew Broderick.
Broderick and Christopher Walken. That was the first time I saw Christopher Walken.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Bull Durham.
Yes, that's a good one.
Great baseball movie.
It's a baseball movie. Yeah.
That was probably...
Costner, Tim Robbins,
yeah.
Susan Sarandon.
A lot of these movies were kind of my first exposure to major actors. I think Bull Durham would have been the first time I saw Kevin Costner.
That was your first exposure to baseball.
Yes, that too. One of my favorite foreign movies, and maybe the first foreign movie I remember seeing, Cinema Paradiso. That's a really delightful film about a young boy who becomes friends with the projectionist at his little town's theater and just really grows up with a love of movies.
I haven't seen it. I don't think I ever will. You know, at this point, let's be realistic about this.
Mm.
I'm so busy with all the Avengers movies.
That's true. Not a lot of time out there
no.
for foreign films.
No, I'll let it go.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
That's Steve Martin and Michael Caine.
Yeah, that's a fun, funny movie.
Is it any good? I know I saw it at the time, and even as I was watching it, it made no impression on me at
really?
All.
Really? Yeah. I enjoyed that one a lot. I've seen it more than once. It's very funny.
Yeah.
And a lot of great physical humor from Steve Martin, as one would expect.
Maybe I should give it another chance someday.
I think you should. Heathers.
Heathers I love.
Heathers, a cult classic.
Which I think this came up when Cornflake and I were doing our 80s movie game.
Mm-hmm.
I think Heathers came out in the U.S. in 89.
Okay.
So Heathers is kind of fuzzy as the year of release. But I'm always ready to talk about Heathers.
Yep. There was a... Winona Ryder had appeared in Beetlejuice, which came out the same year.
Yeah.
Not on my list because it's not a movie I'm particularly fond of. But Heathers was really her big breakthrough. And, of course, Christian Slater as well. Married to the Mob. You might not have seen that one, but...
I did see it.
Yeah.
My friends and I had nothing to do. And all we would do is go to the stupid movies back then. And yeah, we did go to see Married to the Mob, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
And I remember nothing about this either.
Michelle Pfeiffer's mob husband gets whacked, and then she gets into some wacky hijinks after that. But I think Alec Baldwin was her husband who doesn't survive very long into the film. You know, he was playing kind of sleazy characters back then in the beginning of his film career.
Just do not remember at all.
Well, here's one that I know you remember and love, Midnight Run.
Midnight Run is great.
That's one of the all-time great movies.
De Niro and Charles Grodin.
Yes.
A wacky road comedy with gangsters and... it's crazy.
Yeah, that's one I saw over and over again, too. That's just
I've seen that many times. Yeah, I think I recorded that off HBO, and I would pop in my VHS constantly.
I feel like my family probably did the same.
Yeah. Dennis Farina.
Yes. Yeah, a couple other character actors show up in that that would see later. Joe Pantoliano, and Yaphet Kotto.
Yes, yes.
Great movie.
Dennis Farina, he was like the head of the mob in that one.
Yes.
Because he's always, he's either a policeman or a mobster.
Yeah.
That was his whole career. He was one extreme or the other.
A bit of typecasting going on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, he was great.
Mystic Pizza.
Mystic Pizza. That's Annabeth Gish, Julia Roberts, Lily Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah. We went to see Lily Taylor that time, remember?
We did.
Yeah. We saw Lily Taylor, just like an evening with Lily Taylor, talking about her career.
Yeah. She's an actress who I've always enjoyed.
Always done quality work. Yeah, Mystic Pizza was good. Although, I don't think I've seen that in 30 years.
Another interesting little film, Running on Empty. Did you see that?
Yes, that's River Phoenix
and Martha Plimpton.
Judd Hirsch.
Yes.
Is Plimpton in that? I forgot.
Martha Plimpton was his love interest. Was River Phoenix's love interest?
Yeah, that was a weird movie.
That was a weird little movie.
They're like hippies, and they're on the run. They're wanted by the law.
Yeah, the parents
had
done some sort of protest, protesting animal cruelty, and I think had caused an accident at a lab where someone died. So they were on the run, and River Phoenix just kind of wants to be a normal teenager.
Forgot all about that.
Here's a movie that I didn't see until many years later, but Scrooge came out that year.
Scrooge, yeah. I was surprised to learn a few years back that you hadn't seen it. That's a holiday classic.
Yeah, it had just been on my radar, but it's just never something I got around to seeing until recently.
Sure. Carol Kane.
Yes.
Done that. And Buster Poindexter.
And another art house type of movie that I think I didn't see till college a couple years later, but made a big impression on me, Unbearable Lightness of Being.
Yeah.
And that was the first thing I saw Daniel Day-Lewis in.
Don't know anything about that one at all. I know the title. I've heard of it.
So that's my movie list from 1988. Yeah.
That's back when they used to make nice movies.
Yes.
Now, were it not for the Avengers, I'd never go in a movie theater at all. Let's see. What I have. Have you heard the show the last few weeks?
I have.
We've been doing the top 10 singles for each week for whatever year of the 80s we're talking about. So what I have here are the top 10 singles for the week ending November 19th, 1988.
Okay, hit me.
Number 10, Whitney Houston, One Moment in Time.
She's been on the last couple lists, hasn't she?
Whitney's always on these lists. Once you get into the mid to late 80s,
it's all Whitney.
A lot of Whitney in the top 10. She made this for the Olympics. Remember that this song was tied to the 1988 Olympics, I believe.
Vaguely. I didn't pay much attention to the Olympics, and I didn't pay much attention to pop music at that time
either. Yeah, you're too busy going to your fancy art house movies.
That's right.
Number 9 is Look Away by Chicago.
Oh, that's one that I actually like.
That's a good one.
Post-Peter Cetera Chicago.
Yeah, this is post-Cetera. And this isn't the new guy singing either. This is like another Chicago guy. Nice song. That was a huge hit.
Yeah, I
think
like
this
that
was
one.
Their biggest post-Cetera hit. And a good one. Number 8, How Can I Fall by Breathe.
I don't
remember
think I know
Breathe?
That one.
No? Breathe, they had a song called Hands to Heaven. And then they had this one, How Can I Fall. They were like soft rock pop. They had these two hits.
Yeah, I might know them if I heard them, but the titles don't ring a bell.
Yeah, they were pretty good. If you like sappy 80s soft rock, as I do.
Yes, you do.
Number 7, George Michael, Kissing a Fool.
Not my favorite George Michael song, but that was off the Faith album, which I liked quite
a bit.
Yeah,
that was a monster. He could release whatever he wanted at this point. It would be in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
But Kissing a Fool, how do you even describe it? It was such a weird style, like an old-timey crooner kind of a song.
Yeah, kind of a 50s type
yeah,
of
song. Yeah, that was weird.
Song.
He was just releasing whatever he wanted back then.
Yeah, he was really
strange stuff. That
a lot of styles.
There's that song where they were just screaming about a monkey.
Yes, I think it's just called Monkey.
You could do anything.
Or Monkey on Your Back.
Father figure. It got crazy with George Michael. Number 6, Baby I Love Your Way / Freebird by Will to Power. Remember this?
No, I don't think I do.
This was, they merged two songs. They did Baby I Love Your Way from Peter Frampton.
Yeah.
And then Freebird, of course, the Lynyrd Skynyrd. And they made this kind of weird late 80s poppy version, a medley of those two songs.
I mean, I remember there being a cover of Baby I Love Your Way, but I don't remember the Freebird part.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's weird.
It was very strange. Then they were called Will to Power.
Yeah.
What in the world were they trying to tell us?
I do not know, or I'm afraid I do know.
I've been puzzling over Will to Power for a long time. Number 5 is Kokomo, the Beach Boys.
Oh,
that was a big problem.
That's a disaster.
That was from the Cocktail soundtrack, I believe, the Tom Cruise bartending movie. Why wasn't that on your list?
Well,
because it was stupid? And you didn't see it?
I did not see it.
Was
Elizabeth Shue in?
Yes, Karate Kid's Elizabeth Shue was also in Cocktail. I didn't see it.
I certainly did not. But that song was not good.
No, I know a lot of really obnoxious songs came out of that soundtrack. Number four is a U2 Desire.
That's one of the first U2 songs I remember really liking, because it was different than, you know, a lot of their Joshua Tree stuff.
Yeah,
sounds kind of similar, but this was different.
They rushed this out because Joshua Tree was 87.
Yeah,
remember? And then the very next year, 88, Rattle and Hum,
mm-hmm.
which went along with the movie. There was that weird pseudo documentary thing.
Yeah, I never saw that.
And it's pretty good. The Rattle and Hum album was weird. It was kind of a big, sprawling, crazy mess of an album. And Desire was the big hit, and Angel of Harlem I liked.
Yeah, I like that too.
The horns and everything, and kind of tribute to Billie Holiday. But there was crazy stuff in that. They did a gospel version of Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For with a gospel choir. Oh, you haven't?
I've been
spared that somehow?
Yeah, I think I was somehow.
Yeah, there's a duet with B.B. King on it. It's a crazy record. This was Desire at number four. Number three, Kylie Minogue, The Locomotion.
Oh.
Australia's sweetheart of the pop music scene, Kylie. I liked her other song, Lucky. I Should Be So Lucky.
Yeah, that was a little better.
Just a goofy cover.
I've never been a fan of hers, but she's huge worldwide.
Oh, sure. Number two, The Escape Club, Wild Wild West.
I admit I like that song quite a bit.
Secretly, shamefully like this song.
It was had a neat video with some...
I don't remember.
Kind of weird visual effects.
Yeah, what I mostly remember is that there was the parody version on the Dr. Demento show, because this was the Escape Club with Wild Wild West. During the build-up to the Michael Keaton Batman movie, a song became huge on Dr. Demento by the Caped Club called Adam West.
Oh, I never heard that one.
Yeah, it's great.
That's a good idea.
It was really good, yeah. And just kind of a defense of the true Batman.
Yes.
You know, Adam West. And number one, your favorite, Bon Jovi, Bad Medicine.
Well, if I had to pick a Bon Jovi song, that probably is my favorite.
Is it really?
Yeah, I think. Wow. I mean, I don't know. I don't really like Bon Jovi, but maybe I'm thinking of the John Bovey version.
Yeah, you like the John Bovey.
Good Medicine.
The backwards reverse version of Bon Jovi. It's okay, I guess. You know, it's Bon Jovi. You know what you're getting.
Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, most Bon Jovi, it all runs together for
me. So, I don't have a big problem with anything on this list except the Beach Boys.
Yeah, they should have quit while they were ahead.
Well, we should have quit while we were ahead in 1988, because I peeked ahead at next week's list for 1989.
Oh, no.
And that's very problematic.
I bet.
Oh, man.
I mean, even here, you know, there's just really no... Is there anything new wave on this?
No, not really. No, it was all over.
Yeah. All over but the shouting.
Oh, man. All right. We will get to 1989, our final 80s episode, next week with Cornflake back on board.
And I get to the point where there's so much going on in our Chicken Town studios that I get a little overwhelmed and distracted, but wonderfully so.
We have got a few things to run through this week, however. I guess we have to do some Halloween follow-up.
Yeah.
Last week's show, even though it came out after Halloween... we were still in the middle of our Halloween antics.
That's right.
So I guess because we mentioned that we were going to be doing some Halloween costumes for some Halloween events. And as I predicted, I didn't think I'd be able to do something as stupid as my Bruce Hornsby costume. And I don't think it was as stupid.
No, I actually think it was pretty clever. I mean,
yeah,
I'm
a little disappointed in myself in that way.
Well, you'll have to go stupid again next year.
We were one of those adorable couples with matching costumes that everybody secretly hates.
Yes.
Right? Because your idea was the Boston subway system.
Yes, I was the T. And
the T is what they call the subway in Boston.
Short for MBTA. Yeah. And I represented all four of the lines, the red, green, blue, and orange line.
You were dressed up like a map of the T.
Exactly.
Like a map of the Boston subway system. So to go along with you, I did Charlie, which is from the old song, which some people might know.
Charlie on the MTA.
Classic folk song from the 40s, I think. I think the Kingston Trio did it in the 50s, and that's the best known version.
But it was from a political campaign because they wanted to raise the fare on the subway.
Yeah, so it's a wacky old folk song, politically charged, about a guy trapped on the Boston subway system named Charlie. And now, a few years back when they got off the tokens and they got on the card, so now you put money on a card. I think most cities probably have systems like this now,
fare card.
Instead of tokens. but they call it the Charlie card in Boston. And there's a little picture of a wacky guy on it, and mm-hmm. that's Charlie. So I dressed up as Charlie from the Charlie card that we used to ride the subways in Boston. And it was goofy and stupid. And we had a couple of Halloween events to go to.
Yeah, we were even more, we were more social than we are most years. We actually
usually we hide from the world.
Went out a couple of times.
Yeah, well, it, how do you get more Halloween than going to Salem?
You don't.
Salem, Massachusetts, and that's, you know, the witch trials and whatnot. And yes. It's a huge, super Halloween-y, super touristy destination all year. Really.
Right.
But especially October, the advice is stay out of Salem.
Right.
It's just too crazy crowded with maniacs for the whole month. And so that's what I do. I try to stay out of Salem. But we got invited to an actual Halloween slash birthday celebration happening in Salem with some dear friends of ours. So, of course, we were there, and it was cool. It was fine. Got into town, saw the big circus going on, all the crazy people in Salem. There was a whole carnival going on.
Yeah, literally. There was literally carnival rides and things.
Yeah, there was an actual carnival set up in the middle of Salem, which we didn't go to, but we drove by.
Mm-hmm.
I think I caught a fleeting glimpse of Brandon the Shapeshifter, one of our favorite local costumers. I'm pretty sure he was into like his genie. That blue genie costume with the big giant head thing, and he's painted blue.
Yeah, I bet if you're a cosplayer, then Salem is a fun place to hang out this time of year.
I think I saw Brandon briefly just as we were driving by the carnival. He was probably just pretending to be one of those fortune-telling machines, like in big.
Oh, yeah.
I bet people were just giving him money all day.
That's good.
Yeah. So we went out on a cruise, the booze cruise.
Yes, B-O-O-S.
The booze cruise in Salem with our wacky friends, and that was fun.
Yeah, it was a little boat, and a trivia alert. This boat was used to ferry kids to a summer camp called Children's Island in my hometown, which is right next to Salem.
That just sounds so horrifying to me that it's a children's camp, mm-hmm. and it's on an island.
Yes.
The children are trapped on an island, and it's called Children's Island. Because isn't that was it Pinocchio?
I think it's Pinocchio, where all the bad kids go, and they turn into donkeys or something like that.
And that's what happened?
That's what happened to my sister. Yeah, you saw her.
We never saw her again. Did I see her? I saw a donkey. Well, that's bizarre. So you have a weird history with this very same boat, which has now been repurposed.
Exact boat.
Instead of shuttling children to their doom on an island, now it's the booze cruise and just nuts dressed in wacky costumes go on and have a party.
Exactly.
And that's what we did. And a lot of people recognized my Charlie costume.
That's nice.
I got a combination of people getting it right away or not getting it at all and mm-hmm. asking me, what in the world do you think you're doing? And I would take out, I had like a giant, goofy, comically oversized replica of the Charlie card to show them, and then they'd get it. But some people got it and liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Some woman asked to take my picture. Just a strange woman on the boat, you know? I didn't know what to do. I jumped overboard. What choice did I have? But no, that's never happened because I don't wear costumes.
Right.
You know, at the conventions, I'm the one asking everyone else if I can take their picture.
Exactly.
Now the student has become the teacher. So a lovely time in Salem anyway. The ultimate Halloween town, I suppose. I didn't see the Bewitched statue.
No, we weren't. You've seen it before, though.
Yes,
many times.
They have a beautiful statue of Elizabeth Montgomery from mm-hmm. Bewitched. In Salem.
Yeah, it's right near one of my favorite restaurants.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
the pizza place.
Science fiction themed pizza pie house.
Yes, Flying Saucer.
With a statue from Bewitched right in front. That's a cool place. So, thanks, Brittany, and the whole crazy crowd up in Salem. And then we were down in Connecticut.
This past weekend.
Yeah, a week later.
Mm-hmm.
It was November, but we were still celebrating Halloween down in Connecticut. And what I found was that nobody in Connecticut knew who my Charlie costume was. We were so far outside the Boston subway region that mm-hmm. it's a very regional costume is what I learned.
Yes.
Yeah, people are not familiar with the Boston subway Charlie card once you get out of Massachusetts.
But that's so, okay.
Well, I was happy because that made the costume that much dumber. And as you know, that's what I go for. So that was Halloween.
We are done with Halloween.
Yes, happy Halloween.
Officially.
Weird people. I think we'll be talking Thanksgiving by next week's show. We're flying through these holidays.
Yeah.
Just knocking them all down.
Yeah.
That's next week, though. This week, here's a weird idea I had. I sent you a news item. I sent you an emergency Turks last week because I saw a news item about an orangutan. And this is big news for us because we love apes.
Yes.
And they discovered a new species of orangutan.
That's crazy.
It's so crazy. According to one of the articles I read, this is the first new great ape species to be discovered in almost a century.
Almost a century?
Yeah. Well, because, you know, how many great apes could we be missing at this point?
That's true.
So it's amazing that we found a new kind that we didn't know about. Mm-hmm. Now, people have seen these orangutan before, but it took like 20 years to confirm that, yes, this is a different species of orangutan. Because they look very similar to the other ones. This is the third, I think, major kind of orangutan. Because you've got your Sumatran, mm-hmm. and then you've got your Borneo. You know, which are the two islands in the Indonesia, Indian Ocean area where the orangutans live. And then they found this new kind. This is in Sumatra, the mountainous region of Tapa Nuli, if I'm pronouncing that right. And I'm sure I'm not. So this is the Tapa Nuli orangutan.
Okay, so these are also in Sumatra, but a different area.
They're in Sumatra, and yet they're more similar to the Borneo type.
Oh.
Yeah, so they had to look into, you know, land masses in the past and the migration of species.
Some weird things are going on
down
there.
Way in the past. Yeah, it's crazy. So we've got a new kind of orangutan, and I find that very exciting. Because as you know, I'm what they call an apetimist.
You believed that one day you would find a new ape.
Yes, I saw the ape is half full. And it has a different kind of call.
Okay.
You know, because they yell to each other.
Sure.
As many apes do. Mm-hmm. The orangutan will yell. And let's see, Sumatran orangutan have calls that are long and low-pitched.
I would like to hear you do an orangutan call.
I will be doing all three at the end of the show.
All right, we can find something in the show notes for that.
Yeah, I won't really, but this way everyone has to listen to the whole show. The Borneo orangutan, their calls are shorter with a higher pitch. These new freaky new ones, it's a long but high pitch. So they're kind of splitting the difference.
Okay.
Now, here's the problem. We've confirmed we've got a whole new kind of ape. They're already critically endangered.
Oh, no.
There's hardly any left, and we just met them. There's less than 800 of these. Mm. Isn't that horrible?
All right, so we gotta do something about that.
We have to protect our new orangutan friends.
Definitely.
Yeah, because I think this is nice. Because, you know, there's all these Bigfoot nuts looking mm-hmm. for Bigfoot. And here's something real. Here's an actual, we found an actual new great ape.
Yeah, and apes are amazing to observe.
Yeah, because I mean, guess what, you maniacs? We're never going to find Bigfoot. Unless you go back and watch Andre the Giant on the $6 Million Man. That's the only Bigfoot. And he was a robot from space.
Right.
By the way.
He wasn't even a real Bigfoot.
Even that Bigfoot. Some basic orangutan information for you. Because, you know, while I was reading about this one, I thought, let me get some basic information that applies to the mighty orangutan. Most of their day is spent feeding, resting, and traveling.
All right.
That sounds like me.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the traveling
part. Right. Just the feeding and resting.
Yes. They start the day feeding for 2 to 3 hours in the morning. 2 to 3 hours of feeding in the morning. You got to start with a good breakfast.
Sure.
You know? They rest during the midday and then travel in the late afternoon.
All right. So they probably the hottest part of the day is the midday. So
yes.
They can...
When evening arrives, they prepare their nest for the night. Because they're up in the trees.
Yes.
Orangutans, they spend almost all their time in the trees.
Yeah.
And they build a nest. They bend all the branches back. And like when they're young, they learn. It's a big skill they have to learn how to make a proper nest. And they bed down for the night.
But they build a new one every night
and then
move on?
I think so. They travel around and they make a new nest every night.
That's adorable.
They eat mostly fruit.
Mm-hmm. Earth fruit. Please don't put the Roblox
in. I know that you know about Roblox.
I certainly
Mars.
Do.
If Cornflake was here, I don't remember if I've ever told Cornflake. If Cornflake was here, I'd have to explain Roblox right now.
I'm afraid Cornflake's going to come bursting through the door after all. Shut up about Roblox! Yeah,
somebody say Roblox. So anyway, obviously I spent a lot of time thinking about our friends the orangutans this week. So then I started thinking, should we do a top 4.5 list about the orangutan? And then I thought, oh, no, maybe we shouldn't, because how many famous orangutans can you name? Not many. And off the top of my head, I was able to come up with approximately 4.5 of them.
All right.
But then I thought, well, that's not going to work for Cornflake and I to do a list, because there's two of us.
Right, you're going to match.
Yeah, so we need about 9.
Right.
For our purposes.
Yes.
So today, since we're missing Cornflake, sadly, but I thought, here's a chance to do my condensed version of the top 4.5 list.
All right, solo list.
That's all the apes we have room for.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's knock out a quick, pathetic top 4.5 list of orangutan.
Commencing countdown. 4, 3, two, one.
What? One half?
The top four and a half list.
And again, this is like everyone that I could think of.
Okay.
I could think of.
I'll be interested to see. I can only think of a couple.
Yeah. Let's see if you can think of any that I missed.
Probably not.
So let's see. Number four is Clyde. Clyde was the orangutan in the Clint Eastwood movies, Every Which Way But Loose, and its a sequel, Any Which Way You Can.
He was the first one who occurred to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Even though I've never seen either movie, but when I was thinking of orangutans in movies, that was what jumped out.
That was the last one that occurred to me.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, there must be some more famous ones.
I have not seen these movies.
No, me either.
It was 1978, and then the second one was in the early 80s. But Clint Eastwood made a run of, like, wacky comedy, Western kind of movies in that era. He was getting off the Dirty Harry and the cowboy stuff and all that and made these goofy. He was like a truck driver. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of that crazy. Remember how everybody was obsessed with truckers back then?
Yeah.
All the CBs and truckers and bikers and all that junk.
That was pretty weird.
Yes.
It was a weird time.
So it's Clint Eastwood. He's a trucker out driving around the West and he has a pet orangutan.
Oh, nobody should pet. You shouldn't keep an orangutan as a pet. That's a bad idea.
Named Clyde. Beverly D'Angelo was in this movie.
I didn't know that.
Ruth Gordon was in the
movie. Oh, Ruth Gordon's awesome.
She's good from Newhart.
Mm-hmm.
And My Bodyguard.
And Harold and Maude.
Yeah, I don't know Harold and Maude. I only know Newhart. I never saw the movie, but I remember the ads for this movie.
I did too.
Yeah, because they promoted this movie like crazy back then. It was a huge hit at the time. But I remember the theme song because they would play it in the ads. And the theme song is by someone who has come up on this show quite a bit recently.
Bertie Higgins?
It's not Bertie Higgins. Oh, speaking of listener feedback, we got a message about Bertie Higgins recently too. it's Michelle actually from the Iconic Rock blog sent me a wonderful email, and I'm not going to repeat the whole thing here because it's her story to tell if she ever chooses to. But Michelle had a very strange and amusing telephone conversation way back in the 80s with Bertie Higgins.
That's amazing.
And she wrote to us and told us all about it. Anyway, this was not by Bertie Higgins. The theme from Every Which Way But Loose was by Eddie Rabbit.
Oh.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's Clyde at number four. Number three is from the cartoon Shirt Tales. Remember Shirt Tales?
Yeah, I remember it being on, but I never watched it.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. It was so ridiculous, I did not see much. But this was a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, Saturday mornings, NBC in 1982 started.
I didn't realize it was Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, Hanna-Barbera. This was kind of later Hanna-Barbera, so it doesn't really look a lot like your traditional Hanna-Barbera. But it ran for a couple of seasons, and it was like little animals who lived in a tree, and then they would go out and help people and solve mysteries and junk, and they wore shirts.
Okay.
So it was called Shirt Tales.
Because he didn't want naked animals running around helping people.
You gotta wear shirts. You have to cover up at least the upper half of an animal for modesty's sake, you know. These characters started as greeting card characters. These were created for greeting cards, and then they led to the TV show eventually.
Well, that's weird.
Isn't that crazy? But it was all different kinds of animals. There was a mole, there was a panda, there was a raccoon, there was a kangaroo, which was voiced by Nancy Cartwright.
Okay.
A little bit of pre-Bart Simpson voiceover from Nancy. And there was an orangutan named Bogie.
Oh.
Who spoke like Humphrey Bogart.
That's pretty strange.
This was a cartoon orangutan with a Humphrey Bogart voice. It was creepy. It was actually very disturbing to listen to this thing talk.
Mm.
And it was Bogie was voiced by Fred Travellina, who was one of those big, like, Rich Little type impressionist guys back then.
Okay. All right, so we have a Bertie Higgins reference after all, Bogie and Bacall.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. They should have gotten Bertie Higgins to do the Shirt Tales theme song. My favorite Fred Travellina memory, however, of which I have many.
Yes.
But it's appropriate for this time of year. I have a Thanksgiving memory of Fred Travellina. Fred Travellina, impressionist, was in the Macy's Thanksgiving parade one year.
Okay.
And I don't know when this was, like the early 90s maybe. I just happened to catch Fred Travellina, and he's riding up on a float singing a song, but, you know, lip syncing, you know, because nobody really sings in the Macy's parade. It would be impossible.
Yeah.
So there's Fred Travellina lip syncing, and then in the middle of the song, he stops singing and starts speaking, and again, he's lip-syncing.
He's lip-syncing to the spoken word.
Yeah, yeah, to his own spoken word part in the song. And then he starts doing impressions, lip-syncing his impressions.
That's It's pretty lame.
It's magnificent. You know, why not just pop on a tape of the actual Humphrey Bogart at that
point? Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it was outstanding. Man, I love that parade. So that's Bogey, the creepy cartoon orangutan, at number 3.
All right, that was one that was not on my radar at all.
Number 2, Planet of the Apes, Dr. Zaius.
Oh, of course.
That's a big one. Should have ranked higher, probably.
Yeah.
What kind of maniac put this list together?
I would have put him at 1.
I've got to send in a complaint to whoever arranged these lists. But Dr. Zaius. Because I don't think I even realized when I was a kid watching Planet of the Apes that the various apes derived from various types of apes.
Right. I'm not Zaius sure I did either.
Zaius was an orangutan. Yeah. And then like Zira and Cornelius were chimps.
Sure.
And then there were gorillas as well. Like the big scary soldier gorilla type ape men. Yeah, but Dr. Zaius, he was like the crazy, cranky scientist.
Mm-hmm.
He was very upset with everybody. What a nut. Dr. Zaius.
I can't think of Dr. Zaius without thinking of the Simpsons Planet of the Apes musical, where they sang Dr. Zaius to Rock Me Amadeus.
Yeah, that was a beautiful moment. I had the Dr. Zaius Mego doll.
Oh, cool.
You know, Mego made all the Planet of the Apes dolls. They did the superheroes and Star Trek and all that, and they did a lot of Planet of the Apes toys back in the 70s. I had a few of them, including I had a wonderful Dr. Zaius action figure. For all your orangutan action.
Yes.
Number 1 on my list of orangutans, I've got Mr. Smith. Do you remember Mr. Smith?
No.
This is one of the weirdest things that ever happened. Mr. Smith was a TV series in 1983. This is NBC primetime sitcom about a talking orangutan.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not. It did not last long. It came and went in the fall of 83.
Wow.
It's an orangutan. The story, I believe, was that it was like a circus performing orangutan or something, but then it drank some sort of experimental potion that gave it super intelligence and it could talk.
Now, would its lips move like it was talking?
Maybe a little. I don't remember. Uh-huh. Probably not. I don't think so. There are a couple of clips on YouTube, but not much.
Okay.
There's very little of it surviving. I don't know if there's any way to see Mr. Smith anymore.
Okay, I'll have to look up those clips.
Yeah, yeah.
Never heard of that at all.
Yeah, Mr. Smith. And it was dressed up. Mr. Smith would wear like a suit and tie.
Oh, the poor orangutan. Or maybe he liked it. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it was based on it was a play on Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Okay, was he a politician?
I think he was like a behind-the-scenes advisor to a politician, and they were in Washington, I think.
All right.
But they were trying to keep the ape a secret, you know?
Yeah, we don't want anyone to know I'm advised by an ape.
It was incredible. Oh, and the orangutan that played Mr. Smith was the same orangutan from the Clint Eastwood movies.
Okay.
Yeah, same one.
Hardest working orangutan in show business.
Yeah, that was your go-to orangutan in Hollywood back then. And that brings us to number 1/2, and I went to Kevin Smith's Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yep, that was the other one that popped to
you
mind.
Thought of that one already? Yeah, Jay and Silent Bob befriend and rescue an orangutan from a medical research facility named Suzanne.
And isn't that orangutan hinted at in the end credits for
Mallrats?
At the end of Mallrats.
Yeah, it's teased at the end of Mallrats. They do like that little kind of...
Where are they now?
The montage of what happens to everybody in Mallrats. And they just show Jay and Bob walking away holding hands with an orangutan. And then it was like 7 years later, Kevin Smith...
He's like, all right, I have to make a movie where they have an orangutan.
And he did. That was Suzanne. So there's some good ape action in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Well, I certainly can't think of any additional orangutans.
Okay, so that 4.5 covered the ones that you were aware
of. It's definitive.
Well. There's no other... We've established there are only 4.5 famous orangutans in the world.
But if
and
you
two
think
of them are the actual same ape.
Yes, but...
At least two of them.
Hey, listeners, if you can think of other orangutans, please let us know.
Oh, absolutely. Send in your list of your favorite orangutan. And, I mean, apes are such a huge subject that we'll do other ape lists in the future, I'm sure.
Good idea.
Because remember... We're apedomists. See that, Cornflake? We saved you from having to make a list of orangutans. You're welcome.
Making shadow puppets. You know, dance around with them and have yourself a flashlight rave. Or, you know, discover what's lurking beneath the couch. Okay, maybe that's a little bit creepy.
All right, as we wrap up this stupid emergency fill-in show, I was on a couple of episodes of Pop Culture Cosmos in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah?
So you can hear me on the PCC Multiverse, episode number 40. And that was Gerald and I were talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Sure, you've done that with Gerald before.
Yeah, we did this last year. He's realized I'm the guy to go to if you want someone to just be very upset about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So we had a fun little talk about this year's crop of Hall of Fame nominees, as we did last year. Check that out, PCC Multiverse number 40. I'm also on Pop Culture Cosmos, episode 62, and that time we were talking about cartoons.
All right, that's something you love to talk about.
I can talk about cartoons anytime. I don't think we even mentioned the Shirt Tales.
Did you mention Fang Face?
No, we didn't mention Fang Face either. Wow, what did we mention? Those are the big two.
Yeah,
if you're gonna talk
I can't
about
think
cartoons,
of any other cartoons.
No, we've never done a list of cartoons because there are only two.
Mm-hmm.
So check us out, PCC Multiverse Episode 40 and Pop Culture Cosmos Episode 62, part of the ESO Network, just like us.
Mr. T!
And I think that's everything. Well, Mayor, can you get us out of here? Do you know how to do Cornflakes end credits?
I do.
Do it.
We have a website at flopcast.net. That's where you can find show notes for all of our episodes. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/flopcast. We are on Twitter at Flopcast and Instagram, the_Flopcast.
Yes, that's where to find us. And Cornflake will be back next week.
We hope so.
She will definitely be here next week. Come on. We need Cornflake back to wrap up these 80s shows, you know?
Definitely.
So next week, Cornflake will be here to talk about 1989. And I think we'll talk some Thanksgiving also.
Sounds good.
Maybe we'll make hand turkeys next week.
Hand turkeys. Yay.
That'll be good.
I don't know if I want a hula hoop anymore.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I guess we've got to fly to Sumatra.
Yes.
Meet
we've
got to
protect those orangutans.
We're going to go meet our new ape friends, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
The Terminus Doctor Who podcast brings you passionate geekery that's often effusive, sometimes loquacious, but always full of love for the world of Doctor Who. Armed with a queer woman's perspective, you can look forward to the show covering both the new and classic series, as well as other forays into the so-called Hooniverse. So please check out the Terminus podcast for your dorky dose of deep discussion. All, of course, brought to you with a fun side, because as the Fourth Doctor once said, there's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish sometimes. So head on over to terminus.libsyn.com to find the podcast. The Terminus Doctor Who Podcast. Queer, opinionated, Whovian, female.
I'm here to tell you about Miss...
I hate promos, don't you? So if you'd like to hear more about my new show, Mr. Smith, call me at 1-900-40-SMITH, and I'll tell you all about it.
Right.
I think people are really going to call?
Well, I love those rubber chickens. Oh, Chicken Town, you're my home.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.